Hey everyone! Thanks for listening to another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. This is your host, Thea. Today, we've got Katrin Sheehank with us to talk about her book, Bridging the Gap, an introduction to intercultural communication with China. Dr. Katrin Sheehank is the head of East Asian Languages at LSE, Program Director of LSE's BSc International Relations and Chinese course, and UK Director of LSE Confucius Institute for Business London. She is also a consultant to companies wishing to engage with China. Bridging the Gap unravels the nuances of effective communication in China. It introduces readers to the basics of intercultural communication. The book also highlights cultural, linguistic, and socio-economic factors that shape how Chinese people communicate. Oh, hi, Katrin, and thank you very much for joining us today on the Lit Radio podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about your book, Bridging the Gap. And my first question is, why did you decide to write it?
Thank you, Taya, for the invitation. It's lovely to be here. Well, Bridging the Gap is really a long way coming. I think, first of all, intercultural communication is such a deep embedded in my personal life and professional life. You know, I came to UK as a student in 2001, always working in the international environment. Currently, I look after East Asian languages at the London School of Economics and Political Science, and I work in the university has the reputation as a little UN. And really, by working with colleagues from different cultural backgrounds, really helped me to understand how important this topic is. So I think that's the first dimension. And the second dimension is, with my teaching research, I really identified this gap between our understanding from China to the West and West China. So give you a couple of examples. Purely from a linguistic perspective, we have in 2018 over 400 million Chinese students learning English. But globally, we only have 30 million in total who are learning Mandarin Chinese. And also in the UK context, according to the Times in August 2022, there is a shortage of Mandarin speakers in the UK being reported, and only 14 Foreign Office officials are being trained to speak fluent Mandarin on average in this country, which really is causing concern for future diplomacy. And then there's also a gap in terms of knowledge, our understanding about each other. So if I will show Chinese students a picture of Mona Lisa, all of them can tell me the name, the artist, the significance, and some of them even visited and see it themselves in Paris. But if I show them an image about one of the China's most famous painting, known as China's Mona Lisa, which is Qingming Shanghe Tu, so the painting of Riverside during Qingming Festival, really very few students of mine can tell me anything really about this painting. Obviously, this is just one example. The point that I want to indicate is that there's so much about China that I feel my students or the audience here would need to learn so that they can show respect. And they also need to learn who they are dealing with, their counterparts that they are working with. And final point is about the global dialogue currently around China tend to focus a lot on economy and politics, but really very little about the richness of China's language and social dynamics. And I think this is where I really hope this book will contribute to broader understanding and people's awareness about the beautiful language and how to communicate more effectively with China. So this is the main reason that I want to write about this book.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you shared some very interesting insights, Katrin. But could you tell us why you think China is an important market and learning how to communicate effectively with Chinese people can be of great benefits when it comes to business?
Yeah, sure. As you know, China is the world's second largest economy, and after pandemic, and it is slowly recovering. And I think we have very encouraged insights, for example, in 2023, when the China chairman of McKinsey, Zhou Gai, was interviewed. He talked about the next China is China, which actually went really viral. And he really highlighted the resilience of China's economy, right? Despite global challenges we are facing, China is continue really growing and contribute to the world economy. So I think that's very important. And we are in the UK. So taking UK as an example, China was UK's fifth largest trading partner in 2023 and really account for 5.7% of total UK trade. And it really affects many sectors and industry in the UK, such as finance, tourism, and the higher education. So we all know the importance of communication in business. Better communication, better business. And let's not forget what Nelson Mandela famously put: if you talk to a man in a language he understands, that goes to his head. If you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. Why communication is important is because that helps us build stronger relationship and build rapport and trust that is very much needed for every single business to be successful. And that's definitely the case when it comes to working with China and this huge market.
Yeah, I really like that quote. I think it summarizes it very well. And then we've got a great surprise for our listeners. This book is actually the first title in a new series titled Navigating China. So, could you tell us more about the upcoming books?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for that question. I'm very excited about that. So the whole theory of navigating China is really try to enable people to have a better understanding of China through its language, culture, and communication. So the next book in the theory is called Harmony in Differences, where we will actually examine the phenomenon of politeness. As you know, politeness is not universal. If we go to France, kissing each other when we greet each other is completely normal, but that's probably not going to be appropriate and accepted in China. So, cultural differences play a very important role in terms of how our behavior are supposed to be managed and performed in an appropriate manner. And that has implications on business. So, this is the second book, really trying to provide a Chinese perspective on politeness and enable you to navigate politeness behavior in your business world, especially when it comes to doing business with China. And then the third book is called East Meets West. And this is looking at leadership. And leadership is such well-studied and well-written topic already. But with this book, I would like to take a dialogue approach and really want to involve leaders who have extensive experience already working biculturally, and hopefully a lot is with China, so that they can really provide practical advice and strategies to enable people to work together, build a team, and make much more successful business decisions in the global world. And we are also working on other dimensions, for example, involving looking at how Chinese traditional philosophy such as Confucianism contribute to business operation in China, and ancient Chinese poetry, how that could provide insights and value to modern business. So hopefully this is going to be a very enriching and exciting series and bring lots of value to the readers.
Absolutely, and we've got some exciting books coming up as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to all of that. But for now, let's focus on the first book, Bridging the Gap. So you separate that book into three parts: what, why, and how. So I would like to talk with you briefly about each of those parts, and I'm going to start with the first one, which is what. So you talk about the Chinese communication styles. Could you share some of those styles that may be surprising for people living in the West?
Sure. I think one of the most important thing when it comes to understand Chinese communication styles is how high context it is. What do we mean by that is that Chinese communication is very much context-based. In order to understand the meaning, the intended meaning, and how to interpret the message successfully, we really need to look at in what context it is used and expressed. So, last Saturday, I was actually participating in the China Development Forum at LSE, talking about how language, media, and how that shaped the China's global narrative. So I was giving one example to illustrate this point. I don't know if you remember, but in 2018, when former UK Prime Minister Theresa May and her husband visited China, there was this one media incident. So she was taking the photo at the time, holding the Chinese character Fu during Chinese New Year. And in the image, she was holding Fu upside down. And then back here in the UK media, she was reported that it was such an embarrassment because she was holding the character upside down and she clearly didn't know the Chinese culture. But the reality or the truth is that she was actually following the Chinese culture by deliberately holding the Chinese character upside down because it is in the new year, because by doing that, it is actually the Chinese tradition of wishing, good fortune is going to arrive. So in a way, this is a very interesting example. The context of how the character is normally written, supposed to be in the right way, it will be different when the context is Chinese New Year and people doing the paper cutting and how to hold it in the opposite direction then become right. So I just want to cite this quick example to show you that context is really, really important. And then the other dimension is Chinese communication tend to be focusing on very kind of holistic thinking and focusing on the big picture. So in a business setting, we have some incidents also because of lack of this understanding. So for example, when Nike in 2006, when they launched their Chinese New Year new sales of shoes limited edition, what happened is that they designed two different characters on top of each shoe to showcase the best wishes. One is on prosperity, the other is on good fortune. Unfortunately, when the combination of these two coming together, it means getting fat. And that lead to the limited edition not being successful because Chinese thinkers are very holistic. They look at the big picture when they have this two combination left and right shoe together. It become a little kind of funny thing, right? Because no one wants to wear a pair of shoes saying I'm getting fat. So again, that is very rooted in the Chinese communication that we are very holistic. We will communicate in a way that we need to understand the full picture. And the final point I want to highlight sometimes cause a lot of confusion because a lot of Westerners, when they deal with China and communicate with Chinese people, they would say, oh, on one hand, they can be the most, friendly and thoughtful. On the other hand, sometimes they are very direct and quite rude. So people can't really understand how the communication or the way of communication can be so different. So that is actually very much linked to the way Chinese society operate and what we call inside-outside effect. So Chinese people do change their communication style according to who they talk to. So if we are with friends and family, it is absolutely fine to use imperative and actually we do not say thank you or please because that will considered actually rude because you are putting a bit of distance amongst yourself. But when you're talking to outsider and you might use more polite form, but at the same time, it's actually because you're not that close. So again, I think that slightly link back to the idea of context because participants who you are talking to is part of how you're going to communicate differently. So I think these three things might cause some kind of trouble when it comes to how we communicate with each other. But overall, I think the book explains the details, how we can navigate that.
Yeah, it really does. And I really loved those examples. It really shows that understanding other cultures is very important. And in that part of the book, you also discussed digital communication in China, which I found quite interesting to see. Because I didn't realize there was much difference. So could you tell us how different it is, the digital communication in China, as opposed to how we know it here in the West?
Yeah, sure. I think when I talk about digital communication in China, that chapter is very much focused on working in the professional and business world. So I think one major difference is when it comes to digital communication in China is the use of this app called WeChat. So WeChat is very unique because it's in China, we call it a mega map. So it's a kind of combination of a range of different functionalities. So, for example, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Alipay combined or PayPal combined. So, it really allows business to operate at different layers. So, you can communicate with your clients, you can use it to actually promote your business, you can have mini store inside WeChat. So, the functionality of it means that business can do a lot with just this one single app. So what are the challenges? One is the speed. Because with one single app, it can do so many different things. People expect the speed, the response rate to be extremely high. So that kind of reflects quite differently from maybe in the UK, very much business is still quite heavily, or large chunk of the communication is quite heavily relying on emails. So that will be quite different in terms of the response rate in terms of using WeChat to communicate versus using email. And then the second dimension, I think, which can be challenging is this 24/7 culture because of the spontaneity of WeChat and the speed required for people to respond. There can be a little bit blur between personal life and work. So by the way, WeChat, of course, a lot of people use it for business, but also people use it for their personal life, meaning showing their lifestyle, communicating with their family and friends. And because of this, it can be a blur. So you really need to be very careful and thoughtful in terms of your private setting, what kind of message, what kind of post you want to include on your WeChat account. So that it's quite unusual for, UK or West business because most of the time we can differentiate quite easily. So, for example, I use LinkedIn only for my professional, work and environment, and I use Facebook for my family and friends. But when it comes to WeChat, especially nowadays, if I have to use WeChat to communicate with my counterpart in China, it is a fudge. So I think that is something that people, when they work with China, when they use WeChat, they need to be aware of.
That's again a very interesting difference that most people don't really realize actually exists. Okay, then now let's go to the second part of the book, or the why part, so where you write about Chinese beliefs about communication. So what are some of those beliefs?
So we have a lot of traditional proverbs and idioms to demonstrate Chinese beliefs about communication. I think one of the quite important things is that we do believe language to be quite limited. When I say language to be very limited, means communication goes beyond what is just being said, but more about how it's being said. So we have expressions like "yan duo bi shi," that means the more you talk, the more errors you're going to make, or "yan bu jing yi," that means not saying all it is felt. So that shows you Chinese actually pay more attention to the nonverbal aspect of the communication. That is very important. And then the second dimension of beliefs is that it's really important to value one's words. And I think that is a good value across many different cultures as well. So we must honor one's words. So in Chinese, for example, we say "一言既出，驷马难追." So that means, when the word is going away, coming out, it's like the fastest train cannot take it back, right? So we need to be very thoughtful about the choice of our words and what we want to convey, and also articulate in a very meaningful and successful way. And the third point, I think, it's linked to the first believe, because language words are limited, because we need to be able to understand maybe what is said or read in between the lines, let's say, listening becoming super important. And if we look at the Chinese character to listen, it actually tells you a lot about what Chinese believe good listening or good listener is. In the character to listen, you have, of course, the ear. That means you need to listen with your ears, but it has the Chinese character eyes. And not just one, we have a character of 10. So you need to have 5 pairs of eyes. So that tells you it's very important to observe the speaker and trying to understand how they say the words, their facial expressions. And then on top of that, we have 2 other Chinese character components in this character to listen, which is your mind and your emotion. So not only you need to connect with the speaker intellectually, you also need to connect with the speaker emotionally. So all this shows you the importance of how Chinese approach communication. So words are not enough. We need to observe, pay attention. We need to all know what we say, and we need to master the art of listening.
Yeah, very interesting. Again, I think we've all heard here in the West how important to listen is, but I guess in China that's become even more important. And then something other that you discuss in that part of the book, which I found interesting, is Confucianism, Taoism, and Buddhism. So what role do they play?
Yeah, these are actually the really philosophical underpinning of how Chinese people think and behave, and then obviously as a result, reflected in their communication. I would say what they have in common is the idea of harmony. So Confucianism is talking about harmony, you know, with in terms of relationship. Taoism is with the nature, and Buddhism is more with yourself. But all this, because of the emphasis of harmony, then how it's reflected in the Chinese communication is that then we use a lot of indirectness and we use a lot of ambiguity in order to not threaten the other person's face. We're very careful with the choice of our words to show respect. So that's, I think that's something they have in common. When it comes to Confucianism, that is a very also important structure or kind of philosophy underpinning people's attitude towards social status and hierarchy. So a simple way how Confucianism affects Chinese communication, we can just look at, you know, term of addresses. So for example, in Chinese culture, in the family, you can't just call people, you know, your uncle, your auntie first names. Each side of the family will have a very distinctive term that it will tell you exactly where they are, whether it's on your mom's side, whether it's on your dad's side, how old they are, whether it's older than you, younger than you, and the gender. So all this is really to define the status in the family, because once you know the status they have in the family, then you will be able to understand what are their obligations and what you can expect it of them. And in Chinese business, for example, people doing business, if they consider each other to be really good business partners, they call each other brothers, even though they are not related at all. Why do they do that? Again, linking back to the Confucian thought, once you call each other brothers, that means you meant to support each other and you have great trust in each other. And that's, again, showing the emphasis of status relationship. Taoism is a very interesting philosophy in China. It doesn't really explicitly say about communication, but we know in Chinese negotiation, it is very important to understand the balance. So Taoism is really about being able to adapt, being able to understand yin and yang, the constant change. And that's reflected very heavily in a lot of the tactics in when Chinese negotiators trying to get a deal. And finally, when it comes to Buddhism, and I think that, again, it's very similar to a certain extent in terms of Confucianism on harmony, But what is also more important is this idea of self-awareness, reflection, and how Chinese communicators will reflect and will observe the environment and the surrounding and also the inner feeling of themselves in order to communicate successfully.
But then I would like to move to the final part of the book, the how part. And you discuss, well, that's a very practical guide to mastering intercultural communication in China. And you speak about the barriers that can prevent effective intercultural communication. So can you share some of them with us now and also some strategies that can help us overcome them?
Yeah, sure. There are many different dimensions when it comes to the barriers we could, face when it comes to intercultural communication. I think the psychological barrier is quite important because obviously, if you've not have any experience dealing with people coming from a completely different background, it's very normal to feel, oh, I'm right, they are wrong. So that's one of the barriers that you really need to overcome yourself. It's very important to be very open-minded so that you understand your dimension, your perception of the world is probably just one way of the world. So we have a very interesting Chinese idioms called 盲人摸象. So it's based on the story about five different blind people coming to, experienced elephant. Basically, they never seen the elephant ever in their life. So they made this request to the emperor at the time, want to really have a chance to understand what elephant is actually look like. So once they got granted, they all went to obviously touch the elephant, right? Because they cannot see the whole elephant. And because they were touching specific parts of the elephant, they come to completely different conclusions, right? The one who touched the elephant's feet will say, oh, it feels like a trunk. And then the one who touched the elephant, the iron, they will say, oh, it feels like a spear. So that's a very important aspect when it comes to the barriers is about our perception. So we need to accept that people might come and approach the same issue, but with very different perspectives. And I would say, obviously, language itself can be a, important barrier, but that will obviously require patience and time. If you really want to understand communicating effectively with people coming from different culture, to be able to understand their language will really, really help. When it comes to strategies, I think I kind of mentioned a little bit already. So when it's about keeping an open mind, keeping an open mind and reflect the behavior of yourself and observe the others. And then the other is that trying to, learn the language, learn more maybe about a way of thinking and a way of doing, for example, reading this book, and all that will really help you to break through the barriers when it comes to intercultural communication.
Absolutely. And in the book, you also discuss something very interesting, which is called intercultural communicative competence. So could you tell us what that is, why it's important, and maybe share some of its critical components?
Yeah, sure. Intercultural communicative competence was actually defined and introduced by Professor Michael Byron, who is also a applied linguist. So he defined the intercultural communicative competence from five different critical components. So first is skill of relating and interpreting, and then knowledge, then attitude, and skills of discovery, interaction, and most importantly, critical cultural awareness. So before I move to explain a little bit about each of one, and I think we talk about why it is important, right? This is quite interesting. So according to the magazine, the Economist Intelligence Unit CEO briefing, when they talk about corporate priorities, they revealed that 90% of leading executives from 68 countries identify cross-cultural leadership as a top management challenge for the upcoming century. So that's where intercultural communicative competence is so important, because it can really play a role in preventing misunderstanding and to build mutual respect and really fostering positive interactions. So let's look at the five components briefly. I would say, even though it was listed, you know, not necessarily in a particular order, attitude in terms of curiosity and openness is one of the most important starting point. Because as we mentioned before, if you always have the mindset is I'm the right, they are wrong, why are they behaving in this way? I don't get it, feel really, really frustrated, you can never learn. So one of the key intercultural communicative competence is that you have the willingness, you have the curiosity to take the opportunity when you come across something very different from you, certain behavior, that you're open to learn and understand the other person's perspective. And then knowledge, we talked quite a bit about it already. That includes, for example, when we talk about why Chinese people communicate the way they do, what are their, you know, underpinning beliefs about communication, what are the philosophical underpinning about why they think and behave in a particular way, or the artwork we talked about earlier. So all this fall into the idea of knowledge. And then we have the skill of interpreting and relating. So this is about how do you compare actually a particular cultural experience that is different from yours, but at the same time to be able to analyze what are the differences, what are the similarities, and what are the significance. So earlier on, we talked about, you know, Chinese New Year, but in the UK, for example, people also celebrate Christmas. So how, for example, Chinese New Year that is different from Christmas, and are there any similarities? And what does it mean for the people who are celebrating it? So this is relating to the skill of trying to contrast, compare, and try to understand. And then skill of discovery and interaction. I think this one is very useful, and this can be very much gained through, you know, traveling and working with people, asking questions. So this is really through understanding and even making mistakes, you grow with it so that you can develop these skills of how to discover cultural nuances and gain more understanding. Now, the final point, as I mentioned earlier, one of the most critical is about critical cultural awareness, is one of the most important, let's say, in terms of output of the intercultural communicative competence. So what do I mean by that? So this means you get to the awareness that you understand how to behave in different cultural norms. So for example, if I'm in the UK, if in a restaurant, I will say please and thank you because I know this is what is expected as a cultural norm in this country. Well, if I go to eat out in a restaurant in China, I might not, or I don't have to use please and thank you because that's not expected. And it's considered, well, it's still considered nice, but it's not as critical as in the UK. And another example is about the seating. So when I go to travel in China or have business meetings, seating is extremely important. So I will always let the host decide where I'm going to sit. While in the UK, it's much more relaxed. And I mean, our colleagues will not, you know, take offense if the seating arrangement is more casual. So these are the differences, like you understand what is critical for a particular culture, and you try to adapt and act and communicate accordingly to the cultural norm. So hopefully that answers your question, because we can talk a lot about intercultural communicative competence.
Yeah, I'm sure we can talk a lot about that. But yeah, it was really fascinating to hear about those components and the examples that you gave. And finally, Catherine, could you share with us your top three strategies or tips for adapting effectively to different communication styles? And this is for people who just need to adapt to a different style of communication. Probably they're having their first business meeting with someone outside of their country. What would be your top three tips for those beginners in the field?
Yeah, sure. It's an excellent question. I think in the book, I talk about seven strategies, but now if I have to narrow it down to top three, I would say, the first one is observe and listen. So that is so important. Always observe and listen to the communication style of the other person. Pay attention to their nonverbal, cues, tone of voice, choice of words, and really use the Chinese style approach to listening. I mentioned about not only pay attention to the words, but also really connect, right? Show empathy towards the other person. And that is very, very important. And then the second dimension is about positive accommodation. So accommodation theory or linguistic accommodation theory is talk about we all have this ability to be able to accommodate to another person in a very positive manner. So it can be unconscious, but we can make effort to accommodate in a positive manner. So this is something I would say you can develop and you can adapt. So basically, it's the idea of adjust your communication style. So once you've managed to observe and listen and understand the other person's communication style, you can adapt in a particular way. So for example, if the other person is more direct and assertive, you can then become a little more direct yourself because that's a lot easier for the other person to understand what you want to say. And on the other hand, if the other person is quite indirect and more subtle, then I think you need to really also think about how you convey your own message so it doesn't come across as too abrupt or too cold to the other person. And then the final strategy, and I think it's a very practical one, is about ask questions. So don't feel that you are second guessing all the time. So clarify any misunderstanding or just trying to, clarify the intention of the other person who you're communicating with. This is very useful. And provided, of course, you ask questions in the right way. But I think simple clarification questions can really form the foundation so you don't feel lost. You don't second guess the other person's intention when it comes to especially very important business meetings.
Well, thank you very much, Catherine, for those tips. I hope they will be useful for some of our listeners today. And of course, I would encourage them to go and buy the book because yeah, it would be very interesting and very helpful read. But thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, and I also equally hope it will be useful and relevant to the listeners. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.